We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Hamlin will hang on to the top spot. Here comes Chase Elliott. He gets turned hard into the inside wall. Kyle Busch got into the left rear corner. Chase Elliott spins down and pancakes the inside safer barrier with the nose of the blue, yellow, and white Chevrolet Camaro. Chase Elliott will come to a rest down on the apron of turn number one.
Chase Elliott has just communicated to Kyle Busch, indicating that he is, in fact, number one.
Well, you had the conversation with him. How did he leave it?
They're upset. They're mad. I'm not just going to fix it, and we're going to have to go ice cream tomorrow, yep. You know? So, obviously, they're going to have to dwell on it, and the repercussions of it, I'm sure I'm going to have later on down the road.
And now, a man who has never told someone they were number one, but is a fan of ice cream, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a Thursday. I don't know about you, but whenever I'm done with work on a Thursday, it's the weekend. It's the weekend, so we're 4 hours away from the weekend. Maybe your weekend has already started. I don't know. I don't know how you're doing things. Day 72 here, program versus COVID-19, but we had live sports last night. You just heard the racing was last night. You heard it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hopefully you had a chance to hear the race, and you heard right there, yes, Chase Elliott, the old number one. I tweeted out, we're going to talk some football. We're going to get into Pete Prisco, which I respect and appreciate anybody who will go ahead and put a ranking together and put their name next to it. I saw NFL guys firing out, upset at Pete Prisco and such. I always enjoy that because everybody thinks it should be something different, and usually everybody has a bone to pick with one piece of it. Oh, well, that's wrong. This guy should be higher. Okay, what number should he be? Well, he should just be higher. Okay, well, at least give me a list down to where that guy is. No, he should just be higher. I mean, if you're really, I mean, as a fan, yeah, you can bitch no matter what. Oh, my gosh, we should have 40 guys in the top 100. You can do that, right? But along the way, you should respect those that actually take the time to put the list together. I do. Pete Prisco's wrong. I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts about that, of course. You know, it's like driving speed. Anyone going faster is a moron. Anyone going slower is an idiot.
Yes.
Right? A maniac or you know,
slowpoke. Look at that maniac. Oh, yeah, exactly. Imbecile in front of me. Oh, my gosh.
The only proper rate of speed is the speed that you're driving. Yes, that's how it works. But it's also how a 100 ranking works as well. My ranking is the right ranking. Everybody else has got it wrong.
But you will, unlike a lot of people who have a problem with the listing thing, tell them, well, what would you do?
I will.
Generally, when I, like for Frank Opinion stuff, when I say, hey, these top four things, who would you pick? And they, oh, this, how could you not have this band and this band and this band? Because I could only have four. I can't put eight guys in my top four. Sorry. Who would you kick out? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
You say who you'd kick out.
And then wear it as everyone's like, you're an idiot. There's no way that band should be out right for that band. And then you find out what it's all about.
They just don't like – they want their band to have been in the thing. You're like,
that's right.
I get it. You like
that's
those
right.
guys. Cool.
Yeah. But we're going to talk about that top 100 rankings and what it means for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think there's some interesting angles to that. So we'll talk about that here in a second. Stump the Chumps coming up at 3. Listen, do you want great Cajun food from Jazz?
Yes.
All you got to do is stump the Chumps. If you can do that, Todd Lebo in for Peter Yates and Enoch. Here on a Stump the Chump Thursday, great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Blair Kirkhoff coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. And then Eric Eager going to be with us in the 5 o'clock hour. Get some things you need to know as well. But Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus coming up a little bit later on as well. Let's start with the top 100. What I'm going to do is read off all 100 names because I'm absolutely confident that you can put that in order and carry that out, and it'll be meaningful. So here we go. You ready?
100.
Starting with the number 100. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to give you the top 10, and I'm going to give you the Chiefs. And I think there's something to learn from this. Again, one man's opinion, albeit an accomplished veteran writer in Pete Prisco from CBS Sports. Here we go. 1 through 10. Patrick Mahomes, number one.
What? Sorry.
No argument there. Aaron Donald, number two. I think a lot of people will be like, fine, he's the best defensive lineman out there, number two. It's wrong, right? It's definitely wrong. But, you know, there is a reason, and I respect that there's a reason to put that name down. It's just wrong. But Aaron Donald, number two. Number three, Russell Wilson. Number four, Michael Thomas. Number five, Christian McCaffrey. Number six, Stephon Gilmore, corner for the Pats. Number seven, Lamar Jackson. Number eight, Chandler Jones, outside backer DN for the Cardinals. Khalil Mack is number nine, and Aaron Rodgers is number 10. If you want, I'll let you know Drew Brees is 11. If you're good with that, just to let you know, there's another quarterback there. What, if any, issue do you have with 1 through 10?
Aaron Rodgers should not be in the top 10.
Okay.
Top 20. Not at this point in his career.
Okay.
I think it's been a little while. Hasn't had the best talent around him. He's had hasn't always had a great running game, but.
So
I don't,
real
I don't
quick,
think he's the top 10 guy. I don't think he's the third best quarterback either.
Okay, let me try this. Let me rattle off the next 10, and you tell me how many of these guys should be put in front of Aaron Rodgers. Drew Brees is 11. Yes or no?
Yes.
Because I'm making a point here. It's not about Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. It's a point. 12 is Cam Jordan, Saints defensive end. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Joey Bosa, defensive end for the Chargers.
Yes.
Julio Jones, wideout for the Falcons.
Yes.
Quentin Nelson, yes. Colts guard, 15.
No.
Okay, 16. T.J. Watt, outside linebacker, Steelers.
Yes.
Okay, 17. Zeke Elliott.
Yes.
Okay, 18, George Kittle.
No.
19, Tom Brady.
No.
20, Travis Kelce.
No.
No?
Okay. Maybe, but.
So here's, I think it's just interesting. Here's what I would say. I think one is Patrick Mahomes. Two is Russell Wilson. Three is Lamar Jackson. Four is Drew Brees. Five is Aaron Rodgers.
I see where
six,
you're going here. Yeah.
Yeah. Six is probably, I'm going to go with, it's not Brady. I'm having to scroll.
Probably Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson is probably six. I'm going to go Deshaun Watson at six. Dak Prescott, maybe seven. Eight is probably, am I to Aaron Donald?
We got to go down a ways. And then Watson's actually listed below Prescott.
Yeah, I take Watson and or Prescott than Watson. Matt Ryan might be next. Listen, the top 10 are quarterbacks. All right. So I get it that list is no fun. Like, but Aaron Donald's the best defensive lineman in the NFL. He is, by far, no doubt. But there is no doubt Aaron Donald was watching the playoffs on television. Yeah. Russell Wilson picks up the number 26 defense in the NFL was the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson took the Seahawks played it going into the final game of the season playing for the number one seed in the NFC.
Yep.
Number one. Right? Christian McCaffrey's number five. They didn't even sniff the playoffs with the Panthers. Right? Chandler Jones and the Cardinals didn't sniff it. Khalil Mack didn't sniff it. That's number nine. Quarterbacks are what happened. So I'm sorry to make it boring. Right? The old adage like, oh, the stats. You know, Bill James is the guy that made baseball boring because, you know, he came with all the numbers. Well, what he did was clarify it. If what you wanted was honesty and clarity about how the sport is played, then you appreciate what Bill James did. If you like living in a world of wonderment, then you don't want to read Bill James. You want to think that the hit and run may be the key to winning a pennant. Somebody can manipulate the game of baseball. No, it doesn't work that way. But that's fine. Don't dig in, right? Because you'll quickly find out that it's an absolute crapshoot, and you're giving away outs, and you'll kill yourself time and time again. Every now and then, you might grab an extra couple of bases because of it. You might, have the hit and run and run your way out of a double play, and so it works for you. But largely, most of the time, it's irrelevant or negative. Okay? Well, it's the same thing. You know, it's boring to just go quarterback, 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 but it's quarterbacks that win. All right, so that's number one. That's my first reaction to it. The next thing that jumps out at me from this are where the Kansas City Chiefs players sit in this thing. All right, the Chiefs sit at this. Number one, Patrick Mahomes. Number 20, Travis Kelce. Number 34, Tyrann Mathieu. Number 36, Chris Jones. Number 41, Mitchell Schwartz. And number 43, Tyreek Hill. Six of the top 43. Six top 50 players. There are in the neighborhood of over 1,600, 1,700 maybe?
Yeah.
1,700 NFL players. Six.
They're one spot away. If Tyreek Hill was 42, they would have one out of every seven players in the top 42.
I mean, there are 1,696 active players, 53-man roster, 1,700. Six of the top 43 are the Chiefs. That's great, right? Can we agree with that? They don't have anybody from 44 on. Frank Clark is noteworthy that the Chiefs are paying him a contract of over $100 million, and Pete Prisco does not put him in the top 100. I think that's wrong. I think he'll crack the top 100 next year. I think the first half that he was playing hurt. I think, you know, if he plays for 16 games, Frank Clark belongs in that top 100. I actually think he's the seventh guy that belongs. Charvarius Ward had a magnificent season. He's a guy. Juan Thornhill, they're guys that are knocking on the door. But they're young guys. I have no rub with it. But they're guys that should be considered. And every team has a couple of guys. You know, this would be interesting if you had the top 500. Okay, who's the top third plus? You know, a little less than top third. I think that'd be interesting. But I do think one of the things that needs to be pointed out here about these players, it is great to have six of the top 43, right? That is better than not having it. Mm-hmm. You want good players. This is a great positive thing. But how about this? How big is the check for Patrick Mahomes at one, Travis Kelce at 20, Tyrann Mathieu at 34, Chris Jones at 36, Mitchell Schwartz at 41, and Tyreek Hill at 43? Patrick Mahomes is about to be the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League. Travis Kelce is the now second highest paid tight end in football, as he is behind a guy who's not nearly as good as him. What's his name? Hopper, who went to the Cleveland Browns. So, yes, he's fallen down, but he's still one of the highest paid tight ends. Tyrann Mathieu is one of the highest paid safeties in football. Chris Jones is asking for money. He's very soon going to be one of the highest paid players in the NFL. Mitchell Schwartz is one of the most expensive right tackles in the NFL, and Tyreek Hill is one of the highest-paid wide receivers in football. It's great. It's great to have six of the top ones, but can you really carry six of the highest-paid players in their position in the NFL? Top three money? Like, if they're to sign a contract extension with Chris Jones and Patrick Mahomes, we are literally talking about six of the highest-paid players in the NFL, all of them top two or three in their position rankings-wise. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Mitchell Schwartz is like fourth or fifth because they keep extending him on the top, and so the number's not that big. Maybe I need to look, and someone's contract has been redone, and so Tyreek Hill, his per-year basis. And look, Tyreek Hill, we know, is basically a three-year deal, so there's not tons of money tied in it towards the end. Travis Kelce's a ways through his roster. The point is two things. One, you should be impressed by your Kansas City Chiefs. This is a really talented bunch. All right, and I do think that this is not, you know, we've talked about stars and Jags. Like, that's the plan. It's impossible to just have stars and Jags. You can't. I'm open to the idea of saying, okay, we're going to have nothing but league minimum guys and draft picks. That might be able to work, right? That might be able to work. You're going to need to have more picks. You're going to need to acquire more picks so you've got more guys that are making league minimums, right? Some of the draft picks are league minis. But league mini guys, draft picks paid like league mini league minimum guys, and then guys that are making, you know, rookie contracts, first go-round contracts, those guys are going to be cheaper. And the Chiefs are going to have to do it, right? The Juan Thornhills and Mecole Hardmans have to be good. Because especially if you're going to pay Chris Jones and Patrick Mahomes, we're talking about having, yes, six of the most talented guys, but they are going to suck up a ton of oxygen. Let's say the Mahomes number is $40 million. Kelsey's number is what, like 13? Matthew's 13 or 14? We're talking now about $64 million. Chris Jones is wanting $20 million plus. We're at $84 million. Mitchell Schwartz, I think, is at like 13 or 14, isn't he? Something like that. We're pushing towards $100 million, another $17 million for Tyreek Hill. We're talking about $120 million at a time that the cap is not going to rise and may even fall. Can you really fill out the other 47 players on the roster over the course of, you know, what could be, let's call it 180, 190 million, that it's not going to back up to 130 or 140, you know, or 120 million, as we've heard that Adam Schefter talks about the raw numbers, that there'll probably be some stair-stepping that has to be done. But how much money can you take? And the Atlanta Falcons have been carrying the stars part of the equation, and they have not yet to be able to compete. I'm going to say this. It's going to be more difficult for Patrick Mahomes with that check. You need to be ready to understand. And the Chiefs have to be ready from a contract-wise. It is great to have these guys, but there isn't any of them that isn't going to be paid top dollar by the time they take the field this year. Not a one of these is the only guy under 25 is Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not by any chance saying they're old, and I'm not saying cut anyone. I'm saying that you may have to do some maneuvering. Throw in Frank Clark's contract being one of the highest paid, and he is going nowhere because there are tens of millions of dollars worth of cap hit that are coming. So Frank Clark, who I think deserves consideration for the top 100, I think is probably a top 100 player for sure when he's healthy over the second half of the season. I think he's a top 100 player. But at some point, something has to give, particularly when you're looming, when what's looming is a reduction in the salary cap. That is going to be a challenge for this team, and it's the riddle they've got to figure out, and it's made much more difficult by the fact that, you know, they're looking at an uncertain salary cap for next year. Hoo boy, they better be playing football this fall, or it's going to be a really difficult riddle for everybody, but much more so for a team that may have six of the highest contracts in the NFL.
Yeah, Travis, I'm just looking at the number. Travis Kelce, third. I'm talking about the average salary for the current contracts. Travis Kelce's third. Tyrann Mathieu's fourth. Tyreek Hill is fifth. Mitchell Schwartz is seventh.
And by position?
By position. And the other two guys.
Is Schwartz tackle or right tackle?
By right tackle. Fifth highest right tackle.
Wow, that's a bargain. He is the bargain. What's the total of those four?
Total, I was just writing the numbers. Kelce's total is, average salary, you mean?
Yeah.
9.3 on Kelce.
Okay, so a little less than I thought. 9, okay.
On Mitchell Schwartz, it is... Mitchell Schwartz is 8.1.
Okay, so 17.4.
Mm-hmm. On Tyreek Hill, it is...
This is cap hit, right? Not cash?
No, this is average. This is just the average salary. You want cap?
Okay. No, that's whatever. This is good enough for the purposes.
Average salary, Tyreek Hill, 18.
Okay, so 35.4.
And we need Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu, average average salary on him is 14.
14. All right, so 49.4.
For those four guys.
And Frank Clark is?
Frank Clark.
Roll that one in.
Yeah, we'll roll him in. Defensive end.
And then we're talking about what is probably going to be a four-year, $200 million contract.
Frank Clark is 20.8.
So we can call that. That is 69.70.2. And then we're talking about Chris Jones wanting $20 million per, and Patrick Mahomes, people are talking about $40 million per.
So you're...
So we get towards. And in reality, Patrick Mahomes is going to be 6 and 25, 31. 231 divided by 6, 20. 25 million. So 25 and call 20, call 40, 115
million. 115, yeah, for seven guys.
On average.
That's a lot.
That's quite a riddle to figure out. That's quite a riddle to figure out. And as we talk about, you know, a couple of years down the road, Juan Thornhill, Mecole Hardman, guys that are difference makers along the way have to be paid. It's just to give you an example. It sounds great, and it's like, well, the cap's fake. It's fake. Well, you put the numbers down, and the good news is you've drafted and acquired talent really well. The bad news is the system is set up to force you to push some of those players off the plate, especially when they back up the bus, then you really got to make a difference. And I am open to the idea that the NFL is going to have to come up with some new agreement with the collective bargaining agreement to minimize what it is. Are they really, is every player going to take a 25% pay cut? I mean, I kind of don't think so, but I think they're taking some kind of cut if the revenue is going to be harmed, particularly if this is something where we're waiting for a virus and we're talking about a couple of years of not playing fans, or maybe only four or five games before the cold and flu season hits, and so nobody is out and about. That becomes a really big challenge, right, in these uncertain times. So it's maybe been more difficult ever to handle the riddle that is the salary cap. And if you want to say, well, Chris Jones, you got to have him, you got to cut somebody else. Okay, which guy? Let's vote that. Which guy do you pass on? Is it Patrick Mahomes?
No.
Is it Mitchell Schwartz?
I'd rather not.
I think so, too. I think you don't want to mess with the offense. Is it Tyrann Mathieu?
No.
No? Right? So where does it land?
Yeah. Yeah. And what I reject is the notion that you have to. I mean, people say that because, it sounds demonstrative and declarative, but you don't have to. If you can find a way somehow, you may be able to. But anytime someone says, well, you have to sign him.
So that's why if we're sitting here right now, uncuttable is Frank Clark, Tyreek Hill, and Tyrann Mathieu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're uncuttable because you add to the number. They're more to cut than they are keep. Eric Fisher, you want to cut him?
No.
I mean, there's $6 million savings there.
Yeah.
There's no savings in cutting Anthony Hitchens, so you're not cutting him. Kelsey, you could save $10 million. You want to cut him?
Not particularly.
LDT can be cut, $4 million savings. You ready to cut him? That's where I think people are going to go right away.
Yeah.
I mean, so there are some spots, you know, I think, and I think the reality is that they're going to have to make some decisions next year. I mean, they might be able to put it together this year, and I am okay with the idea that they can put it together for this year. But I think we need to be ready for a big – if they're going to keep it all this year, then it's going to have to be a painful move. Remember, we talked about the Dayton Moore is going to have to make a trade, the great commentary that was given by former Reds GM, Nationals GM, Jim Bowden.
Jim Bowden.
Jim Bowden, who said, you know, Dayton Moore is going to have to make a trade that hurts. Like, this is what's going to have to happen. And his point was that, like, you got all these young prospects, but you're going to have to package prospects to finish off this team. And he did. He made several. He made the big one to get James Shields, and then he made even bigger ones to double down with Ben Zobrist and Johnny Cueto. Trades that hurt to build a championship club. Well, this team has won the championship. They're going to have to make some decisions about how to make it all fit moving forward. And that's going to mean taking a step back in some other spots. It's why these draft picks have to be good. If you cut Eric Fisher after this year and Lucas Niang is ready to step in as a left tackle, well, it gets a lot easier to make it all fit, right? The draft picks just have to be really, really good.
And
first contract guys have to be ready to play and play well.
And the Chiefs are in one of the greatest positions of any team that could be in that box of having to cut people and make moves that hurt. And that's that a lot of that money will be wrapped up in the best player at the most important position in all of sports. There are a lot of teams that get in kind of those salary cap hells, and they either have a lot of money on a bad quarterback, or if they don't really have, they don't have that position. The Chiefs should be able to make this work over the next few years in letting go of key players because they have the man at the most important spot.
Yeah. No, and that's and that's, to me, that's where the Seahawks are right now.
Yeah.
And they're getting to a spot where Russell Wilson's contract will start to be a little bit more acceptable if the cap were going up. But we've seen the Seahawks have been good but haven't been quite championship. You got to keep the quarterback. The problem is it gets a little bit thinner to put the people around him. 913-810-810. We'll open up the phone lines, 913-810-810. A lot to get to today here in the program. We're going to talk some college football as well. As I mentioned, Stump the Chumps coming up next hour. Your chance to win some great Cajun food from Jazz. Blair Kirkhoff in the 4, Eric Eager in the 5 o'clock hour. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
You ever quote anything besides statistics, Balkan?
Yes, but philosophy and poetry are not appropriate here.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Talking about the top 100 in the NFL. Real quick on that, we'll wrap that subject up. You can grab a phone line right now, 913-310-810. The phone number, 913-310-810. We'll go to the phones. Chiefs, Sporting, Royals, K-State, Missouri, KU, always a topic here in the program, 913-310-810. What Chiefs do you think are on the brink of cracking this, or maybe got the shaft? Six players, that's certainly a fine amount for them representation wise but is there, do they miss somebody? Is there somebody on the horizon that you think deserves, did he, Pete Prisco, I shouldn't say he, did he miss someone who is deserving of that designation?
Frank Clark is probably, although he wasn't listed in his list of players, when I scanned it, his list of players that were close, and he listed a number of guys. I didn't see Frank Clark's name in there. But I think coming back with a full season of health, second season in this defense, I think Frank Clark's probably destined for that at some point. I think Juan Thornhill is going to be an absolute stud. I think he's going to be there within a couple of years. Maybe 3 years, if not sooner. I can't think of anybody else offhand. I mean, I couldn't say one of the rookies that hasn't even played yet. There are guys you'd like to, you'd think have maybe possibilities, but
right.
But those are the two guys I think are misses.
Yeah, I don't know if there's
ones that could be added onto the list. Yeah.
On the watch list. And he had a list of players that were like just missed or watch list or whatever. I believe Juan Thornhill. I believe that Travarius Ward belong on the watch list. They're the couple of guys. They're the couple of young guys that, to me, have a chance to make a difference. I think if you're going to take a running back number 32, Clyde Edwards-Helaire needs to make his way to it within a couple of years, doesn't he?
Especially on the opportunities he's going to have, I can certainly see that.
Yeah, I think those are the ones that are there that to me have an opportunity. And the part that I like about those two guys is they're cheap.
Quite, yeah.
They're early in their career, yeah. And I do think it's going to be very important for them to have the guys that you know are low cost. To make it all fit together for the team moving forward. So
I'm almost like so optimistic or so almost giddy about Thornhill. Maybe I feel like I have to check myself a little bit. I just saw so much growth from him from the first part to the end, and his physicality, his playmaking ability, his he seems to have a very instinctive player, and it's like, God, I just, whenever I say, I think he's going to be an All-Pro. I'll at some point, I think he's going to be that kind of guy, like not a generational player, but the kind of guy who someday is going to have his name up on that ring in the stadium. I need to like choke my motor a little bit on Juan Thornhill, or else I tend to go crazy about it. I think he's going to be just a phenomenal player.
Yeah, I'm excited about him as well. Listen, really what would be great is if they hit with at least a couple of guys from this draft class.
Mm-hmm. And not just the top guy. That's got to happen. But someone like Willie Gay Jr. has got to – I mean, there are guys who have the potential to be that type of guy, and Willie Gay is one, Sneed's another guy. But at least at least a couple of guys besides Clyde Edwards-Helaire really have to hit.
I think it does speak to the fact that this team was really well put together. Patrick mm-hmm. Mahomes is the most important piece. But to have Mahomes and five other guys speaks to how good they've been at acquiring talent. And I do like some of the young pieces that are there from previous drafts. And, again, we got to see what happens. But, you know, this is supposed to be a really strong draft class across the board. So they need to be guys that can get that done. And I think they will, by the way. I think they will. I think there's every reason to be excited about them. 913-3810-810. Let's go to the phones. Crush wants to weigh in. You're in the program, Crush. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, good stuff there, fellas. I wanted to switch gears and talk about MLB business, if that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I see both sides. You know, what I'm going to get into, I see both sides, so I'm going to kind of say a little bit about both sides. But, you know, I've heard some things about players, and nobody's going to want to hear work stoppage talk or revenue talk or how much – like, people aren't going to have the stomach for that right now. And I don't know if you saw the article that said the Royals were going to lose $113 million. Did you happen to see that?
I know that I have not seen the Royals specific number. I'll look for that, but it doesn't shock me. I know the amount. They're talking about losing $4 billion as an industry, so I figured that the Royals would lose less money than most clubs, but, you know, that's a little over, you know, 100
million.
Well,
the same article said the Yankees was the most at, like, 324. No, I don't
Who was?
Know if those numbers are accurate. The Yankees.
Okay.
And the Royals were at 113. Now, I don't know. You know me, dude, as far as, like, I don't know if those numbers are accurate, right? I mean, but what if they are? How are they going to pay that? They can't get it from a bank. I mean, he already owes on the team, right? They didn't pay cash for the team.
People with a lot of resources. Well, first of all, he didn't pay cash, but it's not because he doesn't have the cash. It's because it's cheaper to get a loan in the long run on an appreciating asset.
And I guess where I'm going with this is, like,
but let me be clear. Let me be clear. One thing, Crush, you can't finance an entire baseball team. They have rules against that. So, you know, I can't remember if the debt on a purchase on baseball is 50%, 60%. But, you know, there was probably somewhere, just to be safe, let's call it between $300 and $500 million of real cash by the ownership group that went to purchase the team, and then they financed the rest.
And when I said both sides, you know, I mean, somebody is going to say, hey, you know, you got the antitrust exemption. Nobody can see your books. You're a multi-billion-dollar industry. Like, you guys are just going to have to wear it this year. But would there be a team that files for bankruptcy? Would there be a contraction, like, at the end of the worst-case scenario? And that's kind
well,
of just what I wanted to throw at you, man.
Let me ask you this real quick, Crush. What do you define as the worst-case scenario? Give me what – not what their books are, not what their finances are, but what is the worst-case scenario for baseball?
Contraction. Right?
No, okay, but I'm saying what happens. Like, what, they don't play baseball this year? They only play 80 games? They don't play baseball this year and next year? Give me the worst-case scenario as far as when they're going to get back to playing baseball.
Well, the worst-case scenario is just in, you know – eternity, like, for it's not known. It's just
okay. Then yes, every sport, then every team will go bankrupt. I mean, if they never play again, I can guarantee they will go bankrupt as companies. You see what my point is? Well, that's what I'm asking you. That you've got to define what is the worst case scenario.
Okay, so and if that number was true, then that man and his people have to pay $113 million out of their pocket. Correct.
If they don't play, based on this estimate, they have to come up with $113 million. Now, I guarantee you, I would be shocked if the people that finance the team, the banks that finance the teams, wouldn't be willing to roll more debt in. Now, do they get all $113 million financed by the bank? You know, probably not. They are, I'm assuming, going to have to wear some of it. I don't think there's a bank that would just take it on, because the valuation of the team has to go up for them to be able to increase how much they loan. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe banks will say, hey, listen, this is a, we're going to get through this. And, the, you know, these things never go up. I mean, there's a piece by The Athletic that I read today that says the title is franchise values always appreciate, but maybe not for much longer. And so it's right. not a good spot. If that's your point, and,
well,
and
I mean,
if that's
I want a player to get as much. What do you think about this one? I want a player to get as much as he wants, but what do you think about the 50-50 deal and the players currently would get 89% of revenue from this year?
Okay.
Obviously, the owners don't want that. See, I don't know how much of this stuff is a negotiating ploy for, and I'm falling for it. You know, anyway, I just want to hear what you have to say about that. You guys keep up the good work.
All right. I appreciate it, Crush, and it's always good talking to you, and I know how you love your baseball, my friend. Listen, it's not easy. All right, let's start with that. It's difficult. I think you need to find an agreement that both sides are unhappy with. Because if both sides are unhappy, then they each gave, and it's probably the best deal that you can get. So if either side's completely happy about it, then it's probably a bad scenario for baseball moving forward. Now, that being said, I've said this a number of times, and I want to be clear. Major corporations, right? I'm not talking about small businesses. Small businesses are different than a major corporations. You know, businesses where the business owner works the front line. In other words, you own a restaurant and you seat people and you pitch in the kitchen and you clean tables and you do that kind of thing. I'm not talking about that kind of company. I'm talking about major corporations. America has been running because in an effort to artificially boost the stock market, right? In response to trying to boost the stock, American business has been run with absolutely no safety net whatsoever. Every single dollar is used to buy more company, buy more company, buy more company, take on more debt. Any cash is used to leverage more debt to buy more company in an effort to increase the overall revenue while never really actually showing profits. You know, it's funny. Profits are not, in American companies, I'm going to relate this to baseball. Profits are not just paying your debt. Profits are the company acquiring cash and even paying dividends to shareholders or to whoever owns it, an individual. Mostly we're talking about publicly traded companies. There are a handful of companies that have cash on hand in America today, and the vast majority of them are tech companies. Google, Apple, Microsoft, they're swimming in cash. But so much of today's companies, and part of that's because the tech companies have grown so fast that they are mini monopolies. They kind of run unchecked. You know, there's a handful of them that dominate everything. Whereas it's an intensely competitive environment when it comes to cars. Right? You want to make cars, you cut everything to the absolute bone. And so American industry has grown used to living without rainy days. Technology has maybe saved us from many rainy days that would have been problems in the past, but America faces a rainy day, and corporations, and really us as individuals, many of us, are not equipped to survive a rainy day. And so the United States government is going and bailing out all of us. Stimulus acts, giving it to companies. These companies will ultimately end up, you know, their main, you know, business, whatever it is that drives them, may very well end up being bailed out. But at the end of the day, your point about, like, what are they going to do? It sounds like your fear is, are the Royals going to go out of business? The answer is no. The people that own the Royals are fabulously wealthy. And $113 million is a lot. Could the ownership group of the Royals write a check for $113 million? Yes. Yes, without hesitation. If you look up the worth of the people that are involved in the ownership of the Royals, they have the money. They are not going to go out of business. In fact, you can't buy. The one thing that Major League Baseball has done and all sports franchises have done better than the general business community when it comes to our corporations is you can't buy into their club unless you're wealthy enough to absorb rainy days. That's the one thing they've done right. They don't let you into the club if you're barely making ends meet. You know, Charlie McCarthy owned the A's back in the day. Connie Mack.
Connie Mack.
Where the hell did I get Charlie McCarthy?
You're thinking of Joe McCarthy, probably.
Joe McCarthy.
Yankees manager.
Yeah. Connie Mack. Connie Mack owned the A's, and he was selling off players because he couldn't afford to make payroll. Yeah. Right? He wasn't rich enough.
Did it twice.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what he did. They will not allow that anymore. And they check your books, and they know that you've got enough to absorb losses. And if you don't have enough to absorb losses, you're not allowed to buy a team. Now, you said, you know, worst case scenario, they never play the game again. Yes, everybody's out for all their investment. Last one to buy gets hit worst. They'll be out $1 billion if they never play again. More, because it's the cost of the team and whatever payroll they pay until they close their doors. I don't think that's going to happen. I think eventually we'll come through this. But it may be 100 and some million this year. It may be nobody gets paid next year and they lose their profits. Who knows? But, yes, I don't think you have to fear that the Royals are going to go under. The people that own, that's one of the things that I think was done really smart. There are some really bright, extraordinarily wealthy people that are absolutely committed to Kansas City. They are Kansas City people, and they are committed to baseball in Kansas City. And I do think that everybody – listen – I get it. If your life is all about money, you're not for one second going to feel sorry for these people. And you should not, absolutely not feel sorry for these people while they're riding this out on their yacht and they're social distancing compared to somebody, you know, jammed into a 700-square-foot apartment that's, you know, living on ramen. No, I would never ask you to feel sorry for these people. All right? But life isn't just about money. And I will say that these are people that recognize the Royals as a civic treasure. And they have committed their resources and did take on risk. There are always risks. Some of them are unforeseen. A pandemic is one of them. And they took on those risks to make sure that calmly, peacefully, quietly, baseball continued to be a mainstay in the Kansas City community. And it does suck for them. It's a different kind of suck. And I'm not asking you to shed a tear for these wealthy individuals that bought this franchise. And I do believe that they will profit lavishly in the long run. But I love baseball in Kansas City, and if you love baseball in Kansas City, there should be a sense of gratitude that they took their resources and they committed them to giving you a civic treasure in the Kansas City Royals and securing it in Kansas City. So it does suck 100% to put a large amount of revenue, money, wealth, resources, whatever you want to call it, on a baseball team that immediately craps the bed. The immediate return is crap. That sucks. There's no way around that. But do I have any fear that the Royals will remain a vibrant part of the Kansas City community? It may take longer before they start raising payroll because they will have more debt to pay off. Do I think we need to be ready that if this team's going to contend, it's going to look a lot more like the Rays operation, the A's operation, than it will the Royals, who went all the way to being the 11th highest payroll in baseball in their last year of contention? Yes, I think we're going to have to watch more of a Rays and A's approach to fielding a winning team than we did Dayton Moore's first go-around and having a championship-caliber team, a team that was capable of contending for 5 years. It's going to be different, and we need to be prepared for it, and we need to understand it, and we need to recognize why it is. It's because of the pandemic. I think there was already going to be a limit to how far the payroll would go for, I don't know, 2 years, 5 years, 8 years. There was going to need to be some money injected back into the company for the health and well-being of the company. But I think we need to understand that that's now going to take longer. But I'd still rather do that. It's Don Dayton Moore to do an even better job this time than he did last time. That's simply what has to happen.
The program with Soren Petro.
Arrogance may not be a uniquely American trait, but I must say you do it better than anyone.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Talking a little baseball here right now. By the way, the Dinos won to take their series against the Bears, if you're wondering.
Boo.
In the KBO.
Well, you picked the right team, and I did not.
I saw stat that they've come from behind in 9 of their wins in the the ninth inning. Ridiculous.
Cardiac kids, man. The Dino baseball. 5:45 or 5:25 a.m. was first pitch this morning.
Did you set your alarm?
I did not.
The Wyverns play tomorrow at 4:30 in the morning. They are 2-12.
Sure know how to pick them, Kay.
Well, I said they sounded like a British author, and they've played like a British author.
Yeah, that is true.
It's hard to hit home runs when you're wearing a tweed jacket and smoking a pipe and going, oh, man, it's nice curveball there, sir. Jolly
good. You're really good at reverse engineering why your decision sucked. Too bad you couldn't do that in advance.
Yeah.
Too bad you couldn't do that in advance. Like I did not want to start, you know, rooting for a team that sucks. And so I went to the top, just not number one.
Yeah.
You know, they were not the favorite. They were the second favorite to win the league. So I will make, you know, this was not some incredible. I used odds to help make my decision making. Dortmund, my Bundesliga team, very passionate, been a huge fan for about 10 days now. Dortmund in the Bundesliga, I chose because, one, Joe Spiker at Easton Roofing is a fan. And so Joe's my boy, and so yeah, I want to root for the same team he does. And he'll go and, you know, tip a pint while watching a match. So I would like to do that with him. So I'm like, well, it'd be best if we're rooting for the same team.
Mm-hmm.
But Dortmund can go. They're the number two seed when I jumped on board. So I'm not building from the ground up. I did that with the Sharks. Okay, I don't need to do that again.
I spent as much time on my EPL pick as I did on my KBO pick, and my EPL pick, Liverpool, came out to be that was immediate dividends.
Yeah, because you took a front runner.
Well, yeah, no, did.
I said I took a Liverpool because it was the Beatles. I had no idea how good. I don't follow EPL. I had no idea.
No, I know that's not why you did it, but it's ultimately it's the karma of taking the top dog. That's what bit you.
Yep.
Hey, I do want to say something to what Crush said about, you know, the players and, mm-hmm. and his fear that like the Royals would go bankrupt. I don't think you need any fear of that. And I don't think they're going to sell. I think it does suck, but I do want to say this. Well, I think the players have every right to expect that, hey, we already negotiated this. We're going to get paid for the games we played based upon the collective bargaining agreement they have right now. I think that's fair, but it will be some pissed off owners. And this is what Mike Matheny said to us. If you need to catch it at 810WHB.com on the podcast, where he said, listen, the industry is going to lose $4 billion. That's ultimately going to trickle down. And I think that was wise advice. And while I think the players have a leg to stand on, if they do that and the owners have to bite it and then pay them that, the next collective bargaining agreement could be an absolute dogfight. And so I think you want to avoid that. You want to try to find a peaceful conclusion to set you up with a better position to try to get a peaceful conclusion on the next collective bargaining agreement.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell, sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, two franchises have hit two Grand Slams in World Series play. The Yankees, of course, are one. Who's the other? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.